manager of the Winnipeg Jets, Mr. Kevin Cheveldayoff. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Cool, good day. All right, thanks very much, Scott. Chevy here. I just wanted to just welcome everyone to the call. Obviously, today, joint announcement was made from the NHL and the NHL Players Association regarding Dustin and the Winnipeg Jets. So, first and foremost, I do want to say, a few words of thank you to Dustin and his time with this organization. Obviously, this was never our desired outcome or ending with Dustin. If it were the Jets writing the perfect script, it would have ended with Dustin holding a great big silver trophy over his head at center ice and flashing, that great big smile of his. But, we're grateful for the time that we did have with Dustin here. He's a force of nature both on and off the ice. He has a tremendously infectious personality that he can't help but like the person. He played a significant role in our team for a long time. He played over 500 games for the Winnipeg Jets since our return in 2011. And, he spent 8 years here. He really bought in. He liked it here. He bought a house here. His family was growing up here. He believed in ownership. Believed in management, believed in coaches, players, trainers, and but most of all, he believed in this city, so much so that he committed to staying here long past the point that he had to. He chose to be a Winnipeg Jet, and he did it well. And for that, we're tremendously grateful, and we wish him, Emily, and their family nothing but the best moving forward. So it's been obviously a drawn-out kind of process, one of which maybe at times you would have sensed maybe I looked frustrated or the like, but I think the frustration really was more so the fact that I really couldn't talk too much about the situation because of the things that were essentially behind the scenes, with the Players Association and the NHL. So I'm just going to, I guess, go through a little bit of a timeline here to lay the groundwork of what kind of transpired over the course of the time, then I'll open it up to questions after that. So essentially, on September 11th, the night before training camp, Dustin texted to meet with me. We met in my office that evening, and that time he informed me that he didn't know if he had it in him to continue playing in the NHL. It was a very emotional time. It was something that I think is still somewhat of a private matter, and that'll stay somewhat private. But it was emotional. It was tough on him, to even come and talk to me. At that time, I did ask him if he wanted a trade, and he said no, it had nothing to do with the trade. He just didn't know if he had it in him to continue playing. So we left it that night. The next day, I went over to his house and talked to him a little bit further at that point. And at that time, we decided that the best thing was going to be to give him some personal time to just think through some things and to see if there was any change of direction or change of mind. So we continued on with training camp, and on September 21st, after giving him some time, we connected again together at the arena, had another long conversation about where things were at. Procedurally for us, we were, getting to the point where we had to start making some roster decisions and cap decisions and the like. And at that point in time, I asked him if anything had changed. He said he still didn't want to retire, but still didn't know that he had it in him to continue to play. So at that time, I told him, I said, look, I've got to suspend you. He understood, we left it at that. On October 3rd, I received a phone call from his agent saying that he had good news that Dustin wanted to play again, but wanted to have surgery on his ankle. So that was the first conversation that, an indication that, he wanted to play, and two, that, there was, some intervention with a surgery. On October 10th, our home opener, I met with Dustin and his agent here in Winnipeg, and we discussed again point blank his desire to play, his desire to have surgery on the ankle. Surgery was performed on October the 23rd, And about 6 weeks after that, he began the rehab process that was prescribed by his surgeon. That rehab process progressed into January to the point where he was to begin skating. And at that point in time, mid to late January, his agent informed me that he was not going to continue with his rehab, and that the ankle was healed, but that he was not going to play hockey. We did have some further conversations at that point in time, the agent and myself, with respect to trying to see if there was a potential trade and play type of situation. But it really wasn't about that. Dustin didn't want to play, and we had to, we respected that in that fashion. So obviously we went through the trade deadline in that manner. So that's a little bit of a timeline and a little bit of probably all the questions, a lot of the questions you guys wanted to ask me that I couldn't answer, but certainly open to other questions.
Kevin, it's Paul Friesen here at the Winnipeg Sun. Is there any kind of financial settlement with this agreement here?
No, there's no financial settlement. It's just a mutual kind of agreement to terminate and walk away.
Last one, follow-up. Do you expect him to draw interest from other teams, and do you expect him to ever play again?
Tremendous player in person. I think he's a popular person around the league. There's only one person and one person only that can answer if he'll ever play again, and that's tough.
Thanks.
Kevin, Brian Munns from TSN 1290. Obviously, your time with Dustin goes back to Chicago. Do you have one or two memories that are vivid for you and Dustin Byfuglien?
Yeah, for sure. It's actually an interesting time right now watching some of the 2010 Stanley Cup final games, and obviously the force that he was in that in those series. It brings a smile to your face, and you have to chuckle when you knew how much he was in the heads of the Vancouver Canucks and the players, the media, the you name it, But again, it was those things that when he's on your team, he was someone that could make you laugh, could make you kind of cringe, but he was from that standpoint a tremendous person.
Was it fair to say that first preseason game against Columbus that really put his name on the map here for everybody in Winnipeg? Would you agree with that?
Well, I think that that was the hits that he obviously had over the years. That was the first one, and that was the one that obviously I think brought a smile to everyone's faces here in Winnipeg. And again, to me, one of the great memories that I'll have of our time together with Dustin and myself was literally a couple weeks before. Free agency when his contract was ending, and I sat there with him and I said, Dustin, you can go anywhere right now, it's up to you. And when he chose to re-sign here and chose to continue to be a part of what we had going, to me that said a lot about Dustin and a lot about who he was, what he's about. Like he loves the outdoors, he loves all things about the simple part of life, and so as you can see, this isn't about money for Dustin, again we wish him well, and I know that I look forward to the day where he comes back into the arena and maybe we have a great night for him.
Kevin, Sportsnet. Obviously, this is a long, drawn-out situation. Can you give us an idea of how this situation affected or limited you in your ability to address what you felt the Jets' needs were this season?
Well, again, it was a situation that you can't predict or you can't see, and obviously, Dustin, at the beginning of the season, felt he didn't have the ability to play or the desire to play at the highest level. We saw obviously at the end of the playoffs the year prior, he played 25-plus minutes a night, you know, in the St. Louis series, and you know, and he was a force out there. You know, again, we had no indications, you know, during the summer that there was anything, you know, going on. We had regular contact with, you know, with him and the older players like we normally do, checking on all different statuses. And you know, again, we move forward like we normally would. So like anything, like the pandemic that we're dealing with here right now, like an injury to a player in the middle of the season, you know, like the situation on September 11th when, you know, your top defenseman comes in and says, I don't want to play, you deal with it. You know, could have, would have, should have, you know, decisions 2 or 3 or 4 months, you know, before that. Well, you don't have that opportunity to you know, to go down that path. You can sit there and say, you know, would have done this or would have done that. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, everybody's got a choice. And Dustin's choice, you know, was to be true to himself and not put himself and maybe the team and everybody in a difficult situation if he really didn't have it in him to continue to play. That's probably the most honest thing that he could say.
The surgery that he had, he and his agent had discussed it with you before they had it. Was this team in agreement that he needed the surgery?
Well, so again, when he's in a suspension situation, and that's kind of how the, I guess when it was worded, you know, the way it was that we didn't know, like, obviously they went and because he's not under our care, because he didn't, you know, report to training camp, because he didn't, you know, do all the steps that he needed to do to get into that fashion. It was done by, you know, a doctor, a doctor that, again, you know, Dustin had seen the year prior as well as part of, you know, the medical evaluation process when, you know, he was injured in the prior season and deemed healthy to play. And, you know, he was deemed healthy to play at the end of the playoffs last year, and we had no indications throughout the course of the summer that there was anything different. Now, obviously, he did have the surgery, and you know, it was something that, again, he felt he needed to take the next steps. And but ultimately, you know, stopped at the point where the therapy would have taken him into the skating portion of the rehab and made his decisions then.
So when he decided not to come back in January, if I'm correct, there was, you know, arguments or a dispute over finances and what he may have thought he was owed. Did that lend itself to him not coming back or not starting to skate again?
I don't follow because I don't know. I can't answer that question. There was a grievance. If he would have presented himself ready and healthy to play, you know, the finances would have started again.
Well, did he give you a reason why at that time why it looked like he was intent on coming back, and it sounds like your belief was that he was intent on coming back? Did he give a reason to at that time why he decided he wasn't going to continue the skating portion of his rehab in January?
I think the answer really speaks for itself, is that he was he was comfortable and contented with the decisions that he had that he had made in September.
Kevin, Mike McIntyre from Winnipeg Free Press. Can you just give us a little bit of insight into the nature of that grievance? Was it arguing that he had the ankle injury when he showed up at training camp and therefore should be placed on injured reserve? Or just give us some insight if you can.
Well, the only insight I guess I really can give to it, because it was. You know, these things are, I guess, kind of legal in nature in the sense that they're governed by the CBA, is that, you know, he did not show up to training camp and didn't present himself to training camp. So in that sense, that's, I guess, where the semantics start.
And just to follow up on that, I mean, there are provisions for injured players, obviously, to get paid. That happens all the time.
the idea that he's just walking away from $14 million here, I guess, is difficult for a lot of people to fathom.
I think that in and of itself is the is the thing is that he, again, I don't want to sit here and speak for him. All I can relay is the conversations that he and I had, and that on September 11th the conversation and the intent was that he had lost his desire to play in the National Hockey League. It wasn't discussing anything further in that regard, knowing full well what that meant. So it really predates any surgery or anything like that. It's that initial conversation with me is really what I can go on.
And just final one for me, but in the eyes of perhaps some fans, they will say that this is going to impact Dustin Bufflin's legacy and what he meant. People that believe he put the Jets in an unfavorable position. What do you say to people who would suggest that this has tarnished his legacy in some way?
I choose to, look at it in a different perspective. I think, ultimately, these players, play. They play at a very high level. It's a very tough, thing to, to do. Certainly, would we have rather, he had come to the conclusions of not playing, at the end of the season prior, or, certainly is a best case scenario, prior to the draft or to the free agency period, sure. But, I guess I would say that, to me, Dustin, showed that, his integrity in the sense that, he didn't have it in him. He wasn't just going to go through the motions and go out there and not be the player that he wanted to be emotionally. So, to me, the legacy is always going to be, him grabbing two people out of a pile and throwing them, throwing them around. To me, the legacy is always going to be, the hit at center ice on Stone from Ottawa. Like, those are the things, the legacy for me is going to be the big slap shot from the point, to blast it by, a goaltender. And, if we choose to focus on other things, that's obviously everyone's choice. But, I think we certainly live in a time right now where we all understand, that things do happen that sometimes are unexpected. And, it's about how we choose to, to move on. And like I say, Dustin, still remains, in my estimation, a tremendous person.
Kevin, Jim Matheson with Post Media at Edmonton. Can you talk to the fact that Bufflin was probably the most unique player in the National Hockey League, able to play it the way he did? And when he was drafted, people looked at him and said, man, he's so heavy, and how can he play? And yet, he's managed to play all this time, and his ability to play forward and defense, which other than Brent Burns, I can't think of anybody in recent memory that can play both positions.
Well, he's obviously someone of unique abilities, and it's interesting, knowing him, over the years, and just seeing the evolution of his game and understanding. There's players that just have natural ability and natural grace, and that was Buff. When you get him on the ice, to see him, move around, as he did, as freely as he could, and with the skills, that he had. And, he's it's an interesting one. Like, it just shows his hockey sense and his ability to adapt. And then Buff loved to play the game a certain way. Like, he played it, he played it physical. He could intimidate you because of his size, but he really wasn't that dirty, of a player when it came to it. But, his skills and that, obviously that's how he truly likes to play. He likes to play with, having an impact, on a game. And sometimes there was high risk and sometimes there was high reward.
Thank you.
Kevin, Drew Mundell from Illegal Tour of Hockey. Hindsight being 2020 and all that, from your personal perspective, think yourself or the organization would handle this any different if a similar scenario was to occur again in the future?
Well, you don't sit here and write books about the things that are kind of unknown. But from our standpoint, again, I don't know that there's anything that we could have handled differently. We've kind of looked at that over and over again, throughout the course of the summer. As I mentioned, whether it's the medical team was in constant contact with him and all our players, as we always do, and so we had no indication of anything sinister on the medical side. And when it comes to a player making a decision, sometimes it's interesting. Sometimes in the world of hockey, the team makes the decisions for the players, and sometimes the decisions the players make the decisions for the team, and in both cases, the team is has to adjust, and that's what we did. And I'm really actually, quite, I don't know what the right word is, proud, I guess, because I've said it, before, the job that, that the coaches, but more so that the players, did to adjust to all these things that happened this year that were essentially out of their control. And did control only the things that they, could control, and put the effort and stayed in the fight, and got us to the point where we're at here right now, and hopefully we can continue and finish off what is certainly a very very difficult year.
Thank you, Kevin. Kelvin Scott, though, from Winnipeg Sun. I was just wondering, going back to last summer, and I don't know how much you follow Dustin's foray into the Beauty League, but he didn't dress last summer. Was there any red flag at that point for you, or did you just not really pay attention to that summer league?
Dustin, from, again, our text conversations and the communications that we had, throughout the summer had nothing that would create a red flag that there was anything other than a normal Dustin Byfuglien summer.
And just the way that, this kind of, we in the media talk, Buff being Buff, and a lot of players have said that over the course of this. I mean, would you kind of characterize this in the way that he's kind of ended his career, potentially ended his career, just kind of that? I mean, this is just the way he is sometimes?
Every player's every player's different, and what goes into the mental preparation, what goes into the physical preparation of all these players, for the rigors of a National Hockey League season, is different. Dustin's a family man. He's got a family, a young family growing up. There's lots of sacrifices that players have to make when their kids are young and different things like that do weigh on them. So Dustin obviously played the game a lot of times, played it on his own terms, and I guess in this situation here he did things on his own terms again. So those are things that are unique to individuals.
Hey, Kevin, it's Arash Madani from Sportsnet. Just pivoting away from Byfuglien for a minute, how often are you having dialogue with people at the league office, at the PA, about possible scenarios and dates and timelines of when and what a possible return to the game may look like? How many different drafts and proposals may you have seen?
Well, honestly, we probably see a lot more from you guys, the media, in the sense of the different thoughts and scenarios. As a kind of general manager's fraternity, we're all kind of hoping and looking for information to see is there an option of returning and what's going on. These decisions are made in large part by there's lots of forces around the world that are coming out with medical things and discussing it in those regards. So you know, as far as, you know, dialogue and that, the only real dialogue that we essentially have with the league is kind of what you guys do know is that they would like, you know, they're looking at options, they're looking at safety, they're looking at all those things, and you know, we get regular, you know, kind of informational updates, you know, from the league, but from the standpoint of okay, get prepared for this, I don't think we're quite at that point yet.
Good. Is there any concern about next fall's training camp and season getting up on time?
Again, we haven't had any dialogue, you know, in those regards. It's I think everyone, you know, is kind of glued to their, you know, TV or glued to the computer, you know, on a daily basis just to see if there's something new. And I think we hang on every word. You know, sometimes too much to a fault maybe, and we try to make these big pivots, you know, one way or another with, you know, all-encompassing statements, but I don't think there's an all-encompassing statement that is out there yet that, you know, anyone can really hold on to.
Thanks.
Hey, Kevin, it's Josh Clifford with the Canadian Press. Just wondering, another non-Dustin question about the fact that the draft, you know, we don't know how it's going to set up right now. It could be remote. It could be in a hotel. The NFL is going with the online remote scenario next week. I'm wondering how closely you'll be watching that in case you have to also do the draft that way at some point.
Well, certainly it has been interesting. I've seen a couple of articles out there, you know, with respect to, you know, the setup and what they've been talking about, and maybe some mock drafts internally to get the kinks worked out of that system. You know, we are living in a different time here right now. Obviously, lots of different video sessions that we've had internally, you know, getting together with scouts over, you know, the different platforms that, you know, that are available to, you know, to teams here right now. So there's lots of interesting dynamics, and certainly, you know, the draft and the way that it's going to unfold, I think you'll probably see a lot of non-football fans just turning in just to see exactly how it all will play out.
And just to follow up, just in terms of, you know, the junior season and the you know, the under-18 tournament getting canceled, how much does that hurt? I know you guys have a lot of video and the scouts have seen a lot, but you're not getting the complete picture, especially if there's no combine, right?
Well, I think you have to rely on the work that you've done, you know, already, and that's why, again, as an organization, we've always kind of tried to keep a handle on, you know, the time scene of players and the, you know, the different portions of the year that you get to see them play, and try to have a good balance in that regard. You know, you know, scouts by their nature, you know, they live in the moment, and they, you know, they go to a game and just hope that the guy is not hurt when they go to watch him. So, you know, they've always had to kind of, you know, learn to adjust. And sometimes a player gets injured in the season, and you have to, you know, rely on those kind of things. The interesting thing is that we're all in this same boat together. We all, you know, aren't getting to go to the April tournament. We all, you know, don't have to, you know, pick or choose or which game, you know, you're going to. Even though you'd love to be picking or choosing which games you're going to in the playoffs, it is what it is. And, you know, we'll start compiling our list, you know, accordingly. And you know, for us, we'll continue like it's as business as much as normal as we possibly can.
Great. Thank you.
Kevin, Sean Reynolds with Sportsnet again. Pursuant to the timeline that you were talking about, I know that around the trade deadline you had said that you had been working on a potential trade for him. Could you pick up that trade line or that timeline that you were talking about after January? Maybe talk about the trade, potentially give us an idea of when both sides kind of decided that they wanted to go in different directions.
Well, it wasn't so much that we decided we wanted to go different directions then. It was more, you know, again, you know, just trying to see, you know, if this was about a trade. And you know, again, I did ask Dustin that question back on September 11th. I asked him at even again, I think in October when we met, and it was never about, you know, a trade. You know, so one last ditch attempt, I guess, before the trade deadline to see, okay, you know, is it about a trade? Like, do you want to go play somewhere else if I can make something happen here? And it wasn't, it wasn't a situation where he said, yeah, I'll go here if you can trade me there. It was, I'm content where I'm at.
Kevin, it's Paul Friesen from The Sun again. Given you say Dustin's honesty and even emotion in those meetings you had with him early on, what was your initial reaction to the grievance?
I think it's a large part procedural. I'm not party to, the decisions that are made between the player and the Players Association. But I think in large part it was procedural in the sense that, he was looking at playing down the line.
But the nature of it was then that he thought he should be being paid?
Well, in general, he's suspended, so he wasn't getting paid. So, if he got back to playing, I guess I would assume that would be the nature of it.
Yeah. Couple more, guys.
Hey,
Kevin,
Scott
Frank Saravalli from TSN.
So forth.
Frank Saravalli from TSN.
Jesus Christ, guys.
Go ahead, Frank.
Just wanted to ask how difficult this has been for you from a personal perspective, given that you go way back with Dustin, back to Chicago, and you're dealing with his personal concerns on one side and his, what he wants to do with his career and life on one side, and then at times that runs counter to what you need to do for the Jets. What was it like kind of working through that process and handling that personally?
Well, first and foremost, you're always concerned about the individual, and when Dustin first came talk to me, my first initial reaction to the emotion was was genuine concern, because I care a lot about all my players, and they have families, they have obviously they have feelings, and these are things that you never want to see a player that is emotional making decisions and the like. So that was obviously a big concern, for me at that point, and make sure that he was in a good spot. And obviously, from the team standpoint, like you said, you have to adjust. And right from that point on, we were finding ways to adjust, and you don't put emotion into that. Other than the pride that I do have in our leadership group. The players, the coaches, they had some things to deal with there at training camp, and they found a way to get stronger through this.
Kevin, Scott Billick from The Sun. Just when's the last time you talked to Dustin? Has it been in the last little while, or has it been a while since you talked to him last?
Yeah, no, it's been a while since, since the last communications we had, I guess, kind of with Dustin himself was after he decided that he was, done with his therapy, and that was, he was going back, not going back, that he was, done with his therapy. Since then, it's really been more just communication with his agent and that process was very, very amicable and very, very much businesslike.
Do you intend on chatting with him in the next little bit, or?
Yeah, I hope so. Again, if we ever can get out of this this house, and those type of things, I hope we do run into each other for sure.
And this last one for me: do you feel or any sense of animosity from his side at all, or is this, like you said, all just kind of been amicable?
Yeah, I never got the sense that there was, any animosity. Lots of the conversations that I had, and again, they'll remain private, with his representative and myself, his agent, myself, during that first part was, we all just wanted to make sure that, he was making good decisions and making sound decisions. And Ben Hankinson, his agent's been, real good to deal with, and, remains that way.